The following is a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting. It's time for To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital. A weekly visit with the healthcare professionals at Rush Memorial to introduce you to the employees and the various programs at the hospital. And now, your host, Julie Dragoo.
I would like to introduce to you Vice President of Provider Services and one of our family nurse practitioners, Joyce Geis. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're on the show again. Yeah, we're glad to have you on board again. Today's topic is COPD. Could you elaborate a little bit as to what exactly that is and what does that stand for?
Yeah, so COPD is, it's an acronym that stands for Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease, and it encompasses several different types of conditions. One of those is emphysema, chronic bronchitis, those are the two biggest ones. And so if people say, oh, I don't have COPD, I have emphysema, I hear that a lot. No, you have COPD. So it's just part of any of those chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases.
Well, and I think when people think of COPD, they use that as a history of being a smoker or something like that.
That's correct. So, the biggest way that you get COPD is from smoking. And so we will have those rare patients who farm or in a lot of dust, right, or are mechanics who had inhaled a lot of different types of mm-hmm. chemical smoke, but far and away it's a history of smoking.
So COPD most of the time is brought on because of former smoking or smokers.
Correct.
Who still do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We will also see a large percentage of people that will develop COPD from secondhand smoke as well.
Yeah, that is another buzzword. So in your opinion, Joyce, would you say that smoking is the biggest way you get COPD?
Far and away, mm-hmm. smoking is what causes this problem. Now, years ago, we really had no idea that it was as extreme as this as it is, mm-hmm. or it can cause this type of problems. We kind of had that feeling, but it was, especially if you watch old movies, everyone was smoking, and a lot of guys that were in the service, everybody smoked. You didn't have, you were either very busy or you were sitting around. And so they smoked, and they just really didn't have any idea of the severity or what that was going to mm-hmm. lead them to later. But now it's a big struggle for me to see young people smoking, because they know very well, they see many, many people living with COPD and having just absolutely struggling to breathe all the time, and yet they continue to pay exorbitant prices for tobacco products, and they continue to smoke even knowing what it's going to lead to.
You add vaping, which I know is a whole nother mm-hmm. story, and it's still inconclusive as to what vaping does, but it's all harmful substances which they're putting into their bodies, and that drives me nuts because they're the most educated.
You're exactly right. And so what ends up happening with this is that, our older folks who really didn't have any idea, they suffer. This is not something that is a simplistic, easy type disease. You will you struggle to breathe. Your lungs change significantly. And so you are no longer oxygenating the way that you used to. So when we try to figure out how this disease, or if you have this disease, you come in and you tell me that you have a history of smoking, you quit, a couple of years ago, so you really don't think that matters. No, you've smoked for a significant amount of time. Your lungs are permanently changed forever because of that. So it can be diagnosed on a chest x-ray. We do see it on a chest x-ray. But not always. And so another way that we diagnose this is with a pulmonary function test. You do certain tests where you blow into a machine. It does calculations. You also inhale significantly, and it will do some calculations. We also can figure out if you have COPD that way. you should be oxygenating the same way that we all do. However, I will see, I think 2 weeks ago, I saw a patient, a 50-year-old patient that had a pulmonary function test showing that they had the lungs of a 106-year-old person.
Oh, no.
So this... Those,
heavy smoker.
And so probably. You can, yeah, and so mm-hmm. you can plan on that person struggling to breathe throughout the rest of their life, however long that will be.
You would think exercise would probably be helpful to the lungs.
That is one of the biggest ways that we treat it, with something called pulmonary rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to quit smoking. Far and away, that's the biggest thing. But it sounds so easy. Oh, well, you just need to quit smoking. It is a very, very difficult thing to do. And so, but... That is important. You have to stop where it's at, what the damage that's been done. You continue to smoke, you will continue to have damage done to your lungs. So if we can get you to exercise to open up those little blood vessels that are, or the little air pockets that are collapsed or filled with junk and mucus and things like that, or that are trapped in your lungs, if we can get rid of that and move that out, you're going to be able to breathe so much better. And that's why we really want you to quit smoking, then get back out there and be active. Does it need to be that you go to the gym and, put in an hour of, huge cardio? Absolutely not. We just need you to do simple things and keep building up until you get better with your breathing.
And that will help with the breathing.
And it will help, yes. Uh-huh. Yes. So if you are having shortness of breath,
mm-hmm.
if you have a history of smoking, you have, and even if you don't, if you have issues that you used to be able to have all the air that you needed to go up the stairs, but now all of a sudden you can't, you need to come in and speak with your primary care provider at first and let them talk with you about it. Try simple things to see if that can improve. Then if not, then testing will be warranted. And we can do the testing to see if you have COPD, then we can get the appropriate treatments as needed. Now, if we're doing these treatments and we aren't getting anywhere, or we're trying a lot of things and we're just not getting the results that we like, oftentimes then we will refer you to a pulmonologist.
Mm-hmm.
We do have two excellent pulmonologists that are coming here in the beginning of summer from St. Vincent, our visiting specialists. And so we are looking forward to having those two pulmonologists coming to Rush County.
If I have COPD, what would you recommend for treatments?
Well, it depends on where you are. And so you would come in and, first of all, if you're just having intermittent issues, where for the most part you do fine, but if you try to do any exercise or any exertion, you don't have all the air that you need. So then we typically give you an inhaler of a bronchial dilator, which means that it just helps open up your lungs. And so that you have the ability to move air. So that, and that can be just something that you will do intermittently.
Mm-hmm.
However, then if you're continuing to have problems, then we use other types of medications that will help, and some of them are combinations where they will decrease the inflammation in your bronchial tubes, and they will also help open them up so that you can move air better. And there's many types of those types of medications, Advair, Spiriva, again, Symbicort, but very expensive. But those are getting cheaper because we're getting ready, or they will hopefully be getting cheaper because they should be getting ready to go generic here in the next few years. So we see those type of medications that will help patients. There's also a lot of other farther on down the line medications, Dalaresp and other type medications that help with breathing. And so, but you really just need to start, get in. Let us evaluate you. Let us get you on the appropriate medications,
mm-hmm.
and get you breathing better.
Okay, Joyce. So they come in, somebody who has been diagnosed with COPD, and let's say the treatments aren't as effective as you want them to be with this particular patient. What is it that you do? Would you refer them on to our new pulmonologist?
Typically, that's what we would do. Is we would try to get a lot of the imaging that they would request for us, or would like to see to be able to diagnose exactly the severity,
mm-hmm.
and then also know exactly by looking at the numbers from the pulmonary function tests and other things of what would be the best treatment for that patient. And so that then the pulmonologist would make that decision of what would work best for the patient. So then oftentimes they'll see the pulmonologist for a while, and if things are better and improving on that regimen, they can come back to the primary care. But in a lot of patients, especially when, you know, patients need to be on oxygen regularly and that kind of thing, then oftentimes they will continue to follow the pulmonologist regularly.
Well, you mentioned oxygen. What makes the determination that somebody needs to be on oxygen?
It really depends, and often has to do with when patients exercise or exert themselves. Sometimes when you just walk across the room or the parking lot or whatever, what will happen is that your oxygen level will drop significantly because your lungs cannot move oxygen in and out of the blood appropriately anymore. And so I will put a little meter on your finger and look at it, and we want you to stay above 93%. If you are staying below with 100% as the goal, you and I just talking now will probably be 99 to 100%. Mm-hmm. But for a well-controlled person with COPD, they're 93% and above. When you are struggling, you'll drop below that. When a patient is 88%, typically Medicare says, yeah, you need to be on oxygen. And so then they'll give them oxygen for that, for them to use or wear. And so when it's that level, you need to wear that and have that all the time.
Joyce, I know at the hospital we offer various screenings for various health conditions. Tell me about one that is offered for our lungs.
We have a low-dose CT scan that is available for patients, and most insurances don't pay for those, but they are fairly inexpensive. It is especially useful in this case because, again, as we talked about, most of our COPDers were long-term smokers. And so if you have that history of smoking, and even if you've quit for a significant time already, you still had a significant smoke history or smoking history, and the damage has been done. Mm-hmm. So we would suggest that you take advantage of these screenings and look for a potential cancer or a potential abnormality or pre-cancer going on in those lungs with these low-dose CT scans. We don't give a high dose of radiation. It's very low and it's very simplistic so that it can be repeated yearly and we can keep a good watch on patients, especially ones that we worry about. Now, if there's something there, then insurance will typically cover it after that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people around here have high deductibles. And so taking advantage of these very inexpensive screenings goes a long way. And it goes a long way, at least with me, for peace of mind as your as your healthcare provider. If I know you had a significant smoking history, yet you've had a negative low dose lung scan, I feel really good about that and your health.
Well, Joyce, again, I really appreciate you coming on board and talking to us about COPD.
Thank you very much for having me.
You can listen to past shows of To Your Health. Log on to rushmemorial.com and click on podcasts. Join us again next week for another visit with Rush Memorial Hospital. It's To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital on Hometown Country 94.3 WIFE. The proceeding was a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting.